Today on Inside Politics, President Biden is speaking right now with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It may not be the friendliest of chats. Biden is said to be furious at how Netanyahu is prosecuting the war in Gaza. The question is, will there be any U.S. policy change? Plus, the electoral battle in Nebraska. Donald Trump is demanding the state change how it awards its electoral votes. Nothing short of the outcome of the entire presidential election could hang in the balance. And thank you for being a friend. You will not want to miss how the DNC is using the Golden Girls, yes, the Golden Girls, to troll RFK Jr. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. We start, of course, with that phone call that we believe is still going on between Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu. It's the first they have had since seven aid workers were killed in Gaza in an Israeli airstrike. CNN senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche joins us now. Obviously, if this call is going on, there's not a whole lot we know, but we do know what U.S. officials at the White House were saying about the president's feelings going into this exchange.
That's right, Dana. The two leaders are on the phone as we speak right now. That call happening and getting put together in recent days following the attack on the convoy of World Central Kitchen workers. It's unclear exactly how long the two leaders have blocked out for this call. But earlier this week, in response to that attack, President Biden mincing no words, saying he was outraged and heartbroken. And I'm told that it's that anger, frustration, and demand for accountability that are going to be the themes of the call that's taking place today. There are some concrete issues that the president plans to raise with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Among those, the need for improved safety and security for humanitarian workers. The U.S. has demanded behind the scenes in conversations with the Israeli Defense Forces, as well as working level conversations between the two governments, the need to improve the deconfliction situation and the communication between leadership about where they know about humanitarian aid workers and what's happening on the ground. We also know that the two leaders are going to be discussing hostage and ceasefire deal talks, as well as the need to get more humanitarian assistance into Gaza. And finally, the situation in Rafah. A senior administration official telling me that it is still unclear to the U.S. exactly what Israel's intentions are with regard to a major military operation there, despite the fact that the two sides held a long virtual meeting this week to try to discuss some alternatives there, Dana.
Okay, I'm sure we'll be speaking to you as soon as we hear that this phone call is over. Thank you so much for that reporting. And some of President Biden's fellow Democrats are demanding that he do more than express outrage. They want him to demand Netanyahu change course or risk losing American military support. Here's Senator Elizabeth Warren today with my colleague Kate Baldwin.
We cannot continue down a path where Prime Minister Netanyahu's policy is to try to starve hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. We cannot approve the sale of arms to a country that is in violation of our own laws on this, and that includes access to humanitarian relief. Congress has responsibility here, and I'm willing to take that responsibility.
I want to talk about all of this with our panel, CNN analyst Gloria Borger, Yasmin Abutaleb of The Washington Post, and Jackie Kucinich of The Boston Globe. So let me just start. This is Inside Politics, so let's just cut through what the politics are going on here. Then you have President Biden saying through aides, anonymously, even some on the record, that he's outraged about what happened to these seven aid workers. You have Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also saying, we don't care what you say, U.S., we're going to do what we need to do. So much of each of what those men are doing is for their domestic political consumption. And that is really important for people to understand.
Well, it is, because they're both risking their political futures here, both of them. I mean, there's been a great outcry in this country. We've seen it in votes in states like Wisconsin, for example, just the other day, where people are voting uncommitted or because they're upset at Biden's policy as they see what's going on in Gaza. And, you know, there's been a demand for an early election in Israel in September. And so Both of them, they've never been close. I think they're less close now. And I think Biden has to find a way to get Netanyahu to listen and not just take the munitions and not just take the aid, but to listen to what he's saying. And that hasn't happened so far.
Yeah. Or not to be too cynical or skeptical, I think is maybe a better word, to at least make clear publicly that he is trying to get Netanyahu to listen.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, that's also a part of why we know that this call is going on and so forth. But part of your point there is that the U.S., the Biden administration, this is new reporting from Natasha Bertrand, did just recently authorize more bombs for Israel. And the reason is because it is the Biden administration's policy that Israel does have the right to defend itself and does support their attempt to dismantle Hamas.
That's absolutely right. The Biden administration and Biden himself will say they're concerned, they're outraged. They've been saying for months they want more humanitarian aid to get into Gaza. Now Gaza's on the brink of famine. It's just a catastrophic humanitarian situation on the ground. So on the one hand, they're saying we disagree with the way Israel's prosecuting this war. The civilian deaths are too high. Aid workers need to be protected. The humanitarian situation is disastrous. But on the other hand, they're not conditioning or even threatening to condition aid in any way. At the same time that they express outrage over, you know, these various incidents that have happened over the last few months, they very quickly will say, no, our policy isn't changing. No, we're not considering suspending or conditioning weapons. So I talked to many people yesterday who said, as with Netanyahu, Biden can express all the outrage he wants himself or through aides, but until he's willing to take some sort of punitive action or impose some sort of consequence, Netanyahu is not going to listen to a word of what Biden is saying.
And you're going to hear from, you're going to hear from the other side that it's just not enough until he does that. I mean, he's getting pressure from both sides, from all sides, but it seems like he's, as much as he is trying to do his Biden thing where he emotes and he tries to bring people in and listen and make them feel heard, it's not working here. And I think another really interesting thing that happened, I think today, Chris Coons, who is a very close Biden ally. You can usually see the world through, if you don't hear from Biden, you can hear it from Chris Coons. He's someone who just said today that he would support conditions should Netanyahu go.
He said that on CNN.
Yeah, on CNN. And so the days blend together then.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if it's today or yesterday.
But he
said he would be open to supporting conditions. And he said, I've never been here before.
Yeah.
And Senator Van Hollen has been saying that for some time.
Can I just add one more name into the mix that I think is surprising? And I want to get your reaction to this, Gloria. I just spoke with Senator Lindsey Graham, who, I mean, it's hard to find a more ardent supporter of Israel, its right to defend itself, its fight to dismantle Hamas. Here's what he said to me. He said, the big prize here now is to end the Arab-Israeli conflict. That's a blow to Hamas and Iran. The war with Hamas has to be looked at through the prism of the bigger deal. I know Israel has to destroy Hamas, but operations in Rafah and in general, you have to look at these operations, how these operations affect the overall deal, which is normalization. So just translation, he's basically saying Israel needs to have a little bit of restraint here because they need to keep their eye on the prize, which is perhaps a deal with Saudi Arabia, which could actually have a really big effect on Gaza long term, not to mention the fact that it was those normalization talks that many people believe was the reason why Iran paid Hamas to have this attack to dismantle those talks between Israel and Saudi.
As I always used to say to my kids, actions have consequences, and that's what he's saying. He's saying, you got to take the long view here. And I understand what you're doing. I understand the need to defend yourself. We understand what Hamas did. But we need to take a longer view here about the future. And, you know, as you pointed out, he's one of the most ardent supporters of Israel.
Yeah, do you think this is telling? I don't know. It was telling to me when he said it to me.
I think it's telling because I think what he's saying to Netanyahu is, you're not looking at the big picture here. You're just looking at the days of destruction so you can go to people in Israel and say, look what I'm doing to Hamas. But, he's saying there's more to it than that, and there's more to it than Bibi Netanyahu's political future.
Yeah.
I do think it's important that Lindsey Graham is saying this.
Yeah, and then you have the other man running for president, or the man running to beat Joe Biden, Donald Trump. And, you know, I think if you have paid attention to Donald Trump and saw what he did in the Mideast when he was president, you would think that he would say, Israel, do whatever you need to do. He's not saying that. Listen to what he told Hugh Hewitt just this morning.
What I said very plainly is get it over with and let's get back to peace and stop killing people. And that's a very simple statement. Get it over with. They got to finish what they finish. They have to get it done. Get it over with and get it over with fast. They're losing the PR war and they're losing it big. But they've got to finish what they started and they got to finish it fast. And we have to get on with life.
I mean, I think this is a recognition, both Lindsey Graham's comments about looking to the bigger picture and Arab-Israeli peace, and then Donald Trump's comments are a recognition that this war has been catastrophic for Israel's public image. There's a whole new generation of voters who have been protesting very fiercely since the start of the war. Polls now show a majority of Americans disapprove of Israel's prosecution of the war. And so I think there is a recognition by Republicans, who are, of course, Israel's most ardent supporters, and of course, Joe Biden, that this war is costing them politically in terms of their support, because there are these horrific images and the death toll, that it being prolonged is not going to be helpful.
And Jackie, losing the PR war, that was, I think, the key part of what Trump was getting at. And if you talk to a lot of Israelis, they don't care about the PR war. They care about avenging what happened on October 7th and about destroying Hamas so it doesn't happen again.
I mean, I'm not going to read in too much into that statement because it is so steeped in policy. I'm kidding. But what he's saying, get it over with. What does that mean?
Yeah, exactly.
What does that even mean? Does that certainly doesn't point to, you know, any kind of humanitarian situation. I think what he's saying is he's talking just about how it looks, not, you know, what is at stake here for all stakeholders.
And what do you think Netanyahu is trying to do? He's trying to get it over with.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't quite understand what Trump's point really is in the real world. What does get it over with mean?
Yeah.
We know they're losing the PR war. We got that.
Well, I think there's a growing fear and acceptance by U.S. officials that Netanyahu is prolonging this war for his own political survival as well. So I think there is a sense that this is being dragged out. There's escalation now with Iran and Hezbollah because Netanyahu, it's in his political interest to prolong the war.
And hostages.
Thank you for saying that. But there's also an important conversation that we might have later, which is that a key member of the coalition says that there should be new elections in September. But we'll talk about that later. Hopefully we'll hear what happened in that call. Coming up, we're going to turn back to really important politics here in the U.S. After weeks of sidestepping the abortion debate, Donald Trump teases that he will be talking about it soon. We have new reporting on that next.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life,
lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a top issue for voters, and it is proving once again to be a political landmine, especially for Republicans, especially the man responsible for stacking the Supreme Court that overturned Roe. Now, after months of going back and forth, Donald Trump says he will finally make his stance on abortion known.
Mr. President, do you support the 6-week abortion ban that the Florida Supreme Court just upheld?
CNN's Elena Treen has been reporting extensively on this issue. She joins me now. This is one of these issues, I know your reporting bears this out, that the president says something and then the team scrambles to figure out how to make that happen.
That's exactly what happened on Tuesday with that comment. It actually caught a lot of his advisors off guard. They were not expecting him to say that, especially because this was asked, of course, in the context of Florida's new law that would essentially allow the 6-week abortion ban to go into effect in 30 days. And his team had put out a statement on that already. They had said that essentially offered some vague language that Donald Trump supports preserving life, but also that he believes it should be left to the states to decide how to respond to this issue, of course. And then you heard Donald Trump say, we'll be making a statement on this next week. But look, to take a step back, Donald Trump has struggled with this issue, not only throughout the entire campaign, but ever since really, you know, Roe versus Wade was overturned and he's been asked about his responsibility for that. He's tried to have it both ways, really. And he's, you know, to some people, he's saying, look, I'm the one who stacked the Supreme Court with the justices who helped get this done. But then to others, both in public and in private, he's saying this issue is a political loser for Republicans, especially in a general election. However, in recent weeks, I know that he has been receiving increased pressure from his outside allies, people like Kellyanne Conway, his former aide, Senator Lindsey Graham, people from anti-abortion groups, all pressuring him to clarify his position on this. And it's something that his team, who really have been wanting him to remain vague on, are starting to acknowledge that, look, he's going to have to do this at some point. I do want to just read you a quick quote from one of his top advisors who told me essentially what I'm laying out here. He said, quote, the Democrats are making a big point of making abortion what they're going to go after us on. So it's clear at some point he would need to spell out exactly where he stood on the issue. It's either do it now or later. I think from a PR standpoint, it's probably better to do it now. And also, I can tell you, Dana, that for weeks now, Donald Trump's team, his policy team, I should say, have been preparing some policy language on this. However, it's still unclear exactly what he's going to do, because, again, he's been kind of waffling between, you know, floating a 15 or 16 week ban on abortion, but also saying it should be up to the state. So we'll see how that plays out behind the scenes over the next few days.
Such great reporting. Thank you so much for giving us a snippet of it. You can certainly see more on CNN.com. Let's talk about this here. One of the lessons that I heard many Republicans, I'm sure you all have heard this as well, that they got from the 2022 midterms when they got their clocks cleaned in many, many places because of abortion was that their candidates had their heads in the sand too much, that they need to stand up and say, this is what I'm for. Is that going to happen here? Is that what is being debated?
I mean, that's certainly not what the top of the ticket is doing right now. But I do think he's a little bit on his own there, because when you go to Congress, I mean, most Republicans have taken a position on abortion. But there are not only 2022, there are still warnings, and there's evidence that they didn't take it seriously. Look at Glenn Youngkin. Look what happened to Virginia. Right. He went all in, on a 15-week ban, and that backfired on him. So they can't not talk about it, but they certainly haven't found a way to talk about it. They're trying to make 15 weeks sound like the reasonable solution to this, and so far you have a lot of people who aren't buying it.
15-week national.
Yes.
Okay. Elena sort of mentioned the fact that Trump has been
everywhere.
Everywhere. Thank you for that word. Let's look at some examples of that.
For 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it.
The greatest progress for pro-life is now being made in the states where everyone wanted to be.
Bringing it back to the states is a less important issue. Now, I happen to be for the exceptions, like Ronald Reagan with the life of the mother, rape, incest. You have to have the three exceptions, because it's just, now there are a few places where you don't.
Without the exceptions, it is very difficult to win elections. You have to follow your heart. At the same time, we have to win elections.
Feels like that last clip was the most candid. That he has to make a decision, but he also has to win an election. He knows that this is going to hurt.
Well, that's Donald Trump saying to the Israelis, you have bad PR. He doesn't want to have bad PR. He wants to win. And he's looking at the elections. He's seeing what a potent issue this is for Democrats. And on the one hand, it's kind of like the vaccine. You know, he used to take credit for the vaccine, just like he's taking credit for the Supreme Court. But now he doesn't talk about the vaccine because a lot of his supporters were opposed to it. And so now he doesn't know how to talk about abortion because a lot of his supporters are very pro-life and want the most stringent restrictions. And that is not where he is in his heart, in his history. He was pro-choice. So, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what he says. And I'm not going to take any bets about where he comes down, but I bet they're doing some polling on it.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's look at a map that helps guide where this is going to be a very big issue. Well, first of all, we have, you see the states that where abortion is totally banned. That's in kind of the orange color, the mustard color. There's a 6 to 18 week limit. Those are important data points. The other are the states that where you don't see any of the names of the states or the abbreviations of the states, because it's got a very they have very liberal laws on it. If the president does decide that he supports a nationwide ban, that could potentially hurt him in some of those states. And some of them, Michigan, Wisconsin, are the swingiest of swing states.
Absolutely. And Democrats have won special election after special election, mostly on this issue. So it is an issue that's helping them. I know the Biden campaign sees it as their sort of ace in the hole for all their other liabilities, political liabilities on the campaign, because voters are so energized by this issue. And I think even though Trump and a lot of Republicans say we support exceptions and in the case of incest, rape, and life of the mother, I think what we've seen in these states that have implemented bans or partial bans is that it's not that simple. Mm-hmm. Because doctors are at risk of being prosecuted or going to jail if they conduct abortions, even when those cases arise, there's a very high burden of proof. And we've heard now of just one devastating case after another where a woman is not able to get an abortion, even in one of those cases, because of the law. It's just a very murky legal minefield when you put these bans in place.
Well, and I think if you're looking at that map, there's one gray state there that I just like to point out. And if you're in the Trump campaign, you're looking at, and that's Ohio. Mm. Ohio is a
what do you know about Ohio?
I don't know anything about Ohio.
Daughter of Cleveland.
But Ohio is a red state for all intents and purposes now. Yeah. It used to be purple, now it's pretty darn red. And they had a ballot initiative, mm-hmm. and that was codified abortion rights.
Yeah.
So. That's what they're looking at. There's one in Florida. There's one in Arizona that are similar.
That's such a good point. Very, very good point. Okay, don't go too far. Coming up, the incredibly static presidential election. The national polls have been basically tied for months. So which issues could tip the balance? And later, here's a potential nightmare scenario for you. 269 to 269 in the Electoral College, a tie. It could very well happen if Donald Trump can convince Nebraska lawmakers to change their election laws.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all hands on deck, or in this case, the campaign trail for the Biden administration. Today, six administration officials, including the vice president, are fanning out across the country to tout how Biden's signature infrastructure law, a bipartisan bill that passed, will help fund projects in different communities. It's part of a larger effort for the president to convince voters that his legislative achievements have actually earned him a second term in office. The question is, will voters buy it? Joining me now to get into that and much more are Republican pollster Brenda Giannini and Democratic pollster Terrence Woodbury. Thank you so much. It's great to see both of you. Let's start with that question. We have talked before and with you and just sort of nonstop since the infrastructure bill became law a couple of years ago about the question of whether and when voters are going to actually see and feel what he got done at home. Is that happening? Are you seeing it in your data?
Well, look, infrastructure does represent a unique opportunity. It's not a sexy issue, but it is a bipartisan issue. It is a multifaceted, multicultural issue that reaches across demographics and geographics. Unlike many issues where we have seen shift of 1 or 2 points because people are kind of hardened in their positions, infrastructure has had the ability to shift by more than 10 points, increasing support for Joe Biden. I think that's because, one, it does not have the hyper-partisanship baggage, but also because it does have the because when you talk about it in terms of what we saw as the three E's, the environmental impacts as the biggest investment to combat climate change in the world's history, not just the nation's history, but also the economic impacts, its ability to create infrastructure jobs right now and create competitive.
So that's the argument.
That's right.
The question is whether it is penetrating. What do you think?
I would say it is penetrating
it is.
At a minor level. I have to give it to the Biden administration. As Terrence and I both know, on campaigns, the hardest thing to do is to tell somebody something they believe is true is not true. Mm. And that's what they were trying to do with Bidenomics, right? They were going out there fanning around saying, no, the economy is really good. And I think as Republicans, we were all very excited about that. We said, keep trying with that. That message is going to fail. So I think they were very smart to pivot to infrastructure. And we saw, after the State of the Union, we saw a slight blip in the polls for Biden. And I think nobody watches this speech. I think it was him getting out there and talking to real Americans in his roadshow. So I think this is going to help him.
So you say that there was a slight blip. I think the best thing that we have going here is a CNN, our great political team, they do a poll of polls. And if you look at just starting in January through the end of last month, last week, really. Yes, there was a slight uptick for Joe Biden if you go back to, it's by one percentage point back to January, but it's been relatively steady. What are you seeing that this does not actually illustrate?
So, Dana, you know, we started Hit Strategy specifically to understand the opinions of voters underrepresented and misrepresented in public polling. And what we find is in a lot of these public polls is that black voters are being both underrepresented and misrepresented. That when you look at some of these polls with a sample size of 100 or 200 black folks in it, then, you know, if you have 10 or 20 of them that are weird and given pollsters weird answers, then you have 10 or 20% of noise in that poll. And so larger sample size allows us to mute some of that noise.
And
so
you're doing some of that polling with
absolutely. So as opposed to seeing 20% of black support for Donald Trump, we're seeing closer to 9 to 12% black support for Donald Trump. So there is an increase. He is doing better amongst black voters.
Trump
is doing better amongst black voters, but not 10 or 20 points better that we've been seeing in some of the public polling.
What are you seeing inside some of these big questions of sort of the horse race question that maybe are getting masked in other ways?
A lot of it, to your point, you're correct, it's stagnant. It really started. Joe Biden had a pretty small honeymoon. About 6 months in with the withdrawal from Afghanistan, he started losing younger voters, he started losing Hispanics, he started losing some black men. And it really has just, it's sort of been a downhill effect from there. Right now, the only movement we see is really Joe Biden's biggest challenge. He's building his coalition again. He's bringing Democrats back home. I think he can do it. I mean, the easiest thing to do is get a Democrat to vote for a Democrat and a Republican to vote for a Republican. But he has not done that yet. He does not have his base intact. So he's working, and we're seeing the numbers start to move.
And to that point, you know, we've seen that Donald Trump has consolidated 97% of his coalition. 97% of voters that previously voted for Trump said they're going to vote for him again. Joe Biden has only consolidated 85% of his coalition. And so I think that represents two things. One is a huge opportunity to get Democrats to vote for a Democrat, but it also represents where we see this softness in his base with voters of color and young voters and continuing to deliver a message that resonates.
So it's about motivating, which is the base, and persuading, which is the people who are not really.
I think his bigger problem is motivating. And to your point, I would say all these young voters, maybe skeptical Democrats that voted for Joe Biden in 2020, he was never meant to be a two-term president. He was meant to, you know, stop the chaos, the circus of the Trump White House, to, you know, not have the nonstop media cycle that was exhausting for everybody.
Sorry.
So I think they're just not, Democrats just aren't, not that I should be speaking for Democrats, but they just aren't excited about, you know, voting for him again.
But the chaos is back, you know, and I think that this, as this campaign and as this cycle continues to materialize as a choice between returning to that chaos or continuing the progress, I do think Joe Biden will continue to
consolidate. You're seeing that in the data that you're getting
back? Yes, I do think he'll continue to consolidate that coalition.
All right. Great to have you both on. Please come back. Appreciate it. Up next, Donald Trump and Nebraska Republicans want to change how that state awards electoral votes. There is a scenario that is very much in the realm of possibility that could make what happens in the Cornhusker state decide the entire presidential election. We'll explain after a break. Breaking news, the Atlanta judge who was dealing with Donald Trump's bid to get the Georgia election case dismissed, he said that Donald Trump can potentially deal with the free speech issue. Let's talk more about that with CNN's Sarah Murray. Sarah?
Dana, that's right. We heard these extensive arguments last week from Trump attorney Steve Sadow in Georgia, essentially arguing that the indictment in Georgia should be dismissed because Trump was merely engaging in political speech that was protected under the First Amendment. Well, the judge in Georgia today, Scott McAfee, said he is not going to dismiss the indictment against Donald Trump and a number of his co-defendants, essentially saying that this argument falls short. Now, in many ways, this is not a surprise. We have seen other co-defendants in this case in Georgia try to make these First Amendment arguments. Scott McAfee, the judge, also rejected them in the case of the other defendants. We've even seen these arguments made by Trump in the federal case, and we saw federal judge Tanya Chutkan consider these First Amendment arguments and reject them there. So in many ways, this was not the motion that the Trump team was really hanging their hat on, was really hoping would lead to the end of the indictment. So the case continues against Trump in Georgia, Dana.
Yeah. Headline is case not dismissed.
Right.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Appreciate that. Now imagine this, a 269 to 269 tie in the Electoral College. That could become much more likely if Nebraska changes how it awards electoral votes. This week, Donald Trump and his allies are pressuring state lawmakers to do just that. Right now, it is one of two states that awards some of its electoral votes by congressional district. The other is the state of Maine. Switching to a winner-take-all system could strip Biden of an electoral vote that he won in 2020, and this election could very well come down to that single electoral college vote. CNN's Daniel Strauss is digging into this. Daniel, what are you learning?
Just that this is a big hurdle for advocates of changing the way Nebraska allocates delegates are trying to overcome. And part of it is just the very fact that this is how they've done it in Nebraska for a while now. It's very apparent to Democrats that there is a scenario where this election is super close and comes down to how Nebraska allocates votes. And they obviously don't want to give an advantage to Donald Trump that would swing the election against them. At the same time, though, this bill is just running into all kinds of legislative and very technical hurdles, including that it wasn't blessed with a priority sort of label that in the Nebraska legislature is required at this point in their cycle for moving a bill forward. Look, Dana, though, this is really important because Democrats and Republicans have been saying throughout the cycle, this is going to be a very close election, and it really could come down to just a few electoral votes, a few thousand votes in states that otherwise really haven't been attended to by either of the big campaigns.
Let's give our viewers a scenario here that is, again, not out of the realm of possibility at all. If Joe Biden wins that Nebraska vote, that one electoral vote, and he wins back, again, wins the so-called blue wall, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. You have 270 to 268, so he wins the presidency. Now let's see the scenario where that Nebraska law is changed, 269 to 269, an electoral college tie.
Right, which goes to a whole different arena, and it puts us into a morass that we don't usually experience in electoral and campaign politics. That's why, and this is entirely possible. We've seen in the past few election cycles that the blue wall is breachable, and that states that are usually Republican-leaning can be flipped, Arizona and Georgia. So it really could come down to a few electoral votes, and it could come down to one congressional district in Nebraska.
Absolutely fascinating, and we are going to be watching to see what the Nebraska legislature does. Thanks so much for bringing this to us. Appreciate it. And ahead, riddle me this. What do the Golden Girls and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have in common? Stay with us.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again.
Thank you for being a friend. The Democratic National Committee is taking a sarcastic swipe at independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., highlighting what they say is his lack of transparency about his campaign donors. Take a look.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
The panel is back. I got so excited, so verklempt about the idea of listening to the Golden Girls theme song that I lost my train of thought. What do you all think of this? Is this something that, I mean, obviously we're playing it and we're talking about it, it's clever, but it does go to the notion of a core argument that the DNC and the Biden campaign has, which is who's funding this guy and isn't it just friends of Donald Trump?
Right, well, it's this, the person they're referring to is, I think, Tim Mellon, who's given gobs of money to both RFK and to Trump. And I think the point is that this is a guy who wants to hurt Joe Biden. And look at who he's giving money to, and he's not the only one, you know?
I think that's exactly the point that they're trying to make, that this is another effort by Republicans to hurt Biden and the campaign. This is not a candidate to be taken seriously. But I have seen some reporting that there is concern among Republicans that RFK could hurt Trump as well with his anti-vaccine positions, some of his libertarian positions. So I think it's still a little bit unclear who he's more of a spoiler for, but that's obviously not the point the DNC is trying to make.
But right. I think what this does show, while they're not considering him a serious candidate, they are taking him as a serious threat, which is why you have outside supportive group of Biden that is taking on RFK Jr. And they know the margins in some of these states are going to be very narrow. The Trump campaign knows it too. You haven't seen them openly spending money to go after RFK Jr., but if it starts looking like he's going to cut into whatever numbers they have, I wouldn't be surprised if they're not far behind.
And the argument that he is making and what he's trying to tap into is dissatisfaction with both of the options that people have on the Democratic and Republican side. Listen to a little bit of what RFK Jr. told Aaron Burnett this week on that issue.
And if you vote for President Trump or President Biden, they both had their chance, you're going to get more of the same. If somebody actually wants change, wants to actually alter those issues, they're going to vote for me.
I mean, I'm guessing that we know from polls that there is a bigger segment than either campaign wants that's very much open to that argument.
Right, and I think you're right, but I also think that right now what you're seeing Democrats do, and to a lesser extent Republicans, is trying to define him. I think because right now, very much the Kennedy name is what he is trading on, and knowing him as an individual is something that I know that that Biden's allies are trying to push out there.
You know, just the fact that he's there and you have these voters that are those so-called double haters is dangerous. It's just dangerous because people can decide at the last minute, you know what? I'll just throw it away and vote for Robert Kennedy Jr. no matter what.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break. Before we go, a quick reminder, our live coverage of the eclipse starts Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern right here on CNN or stream it on Max.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.